Chapter 44, Saturday, January 18th, 1777. That the question was not whether, by a declaration of independence, we should make ourselves what we are not, but whether we should declare a fact which already exists. Thomas Jefferson about the writing of the Declaration of Independence. I folded the map and pass, blew out the candles, and crept down the stairs. I took the scissors out of the sewing basket in the kitchen and snipped the threads of the hem of my cloak. I opened the map flat, inserted it between the lining and the woolen layer, then quick resewed the hem. Next, I dressed myself in all of my clothing, two shifts and two skirts, my cloak, shawl, and the blanket from my pallet. I took a basket from a high shelf and loaded it with bread, hard cheese, and a piece of dried beef I cut from the slab that hung in the pantry. As I put the beef back, I studied the loose board in the back of the pantry. I pried it up and removed the lead piece from the king's statue and my cloth packet of seeds. After some consideration, I took out common sense, too, and stuck all of it in the pocket I wore under my skirt alongside the false pass. I walked down the hall, reached for the handle of the front door, and stopped. Lady Seymour lay in the silent parlor. I doubted anyone had thought to put wood on the fire for her. That was my chore. No, not anymore. I was quit of this place. I reached again for the handle. But she was alone, old, and maybe freezing. It would take only an instant. I stepped into the parlor. Lady Seymour lay in her bed, her eyes closed, the covers barely moving. Her fire was near burned down to ash. I quick added logs and blew on the coals until small flames jumped up and bit into the wood. She wouldn't die of the cold this night, not on my account. I was halfway to the door when I saw her silk reticule hung from the back of a chair. There were coins in that bag, coins that would help a girl set on walking to South Carolina. But that was stealing from somebody who had showed me kindness. But she stood by when Ruth was taken, and she returned me to Madam. But taking her money was still stealing. 'Twas wrong, but I swallowed hard, opened the bag, and removed the coin purse from the bottom. When I hung it back on the chair, Lady Seymour's eyes were open and following me. The question on her face was plain. "I'm sorry," I said. "She's made up her mind to sell me." She nodded once. I built up the fire. "Would you like some water?" She nodded again. I poured a cup of water from the pitcher and held it to her dry lips. She swallowed a little, but the rest spilled down her face. I set down the cup and wiped away the water. "I have to go. Please forgive me." Lady Seymour cut her eyes at her husband's small portrait on the bedside table, then to the coin purse that weighed down my hand. She gave a sharp nod of the head. One side of her mouth turned up in a smile. "I'll put the money back," I said. "Forgive me." She shook her head from side to side, her mouth moving with trapped words. "I can keep it?" Another nod, and another pointed stare at her husband. "Because I rescued his picture?" She nodded again, and a tear slipped down her cheek. "Well then, ma'am, I'm happy to take it." As I set the coin purse in my pocket, she opened her mouth and a small sound escaped. "Did you say something, Lady Seymour?" I leaned in close, though it scared me, for the smell of death hung over that bed like a fog. Her lips moved again, forming her last word to me, a whisper almost too faint to hear. "Run!" I opened the front door of the Lockton mansion and looked up the street and down, not a soul in sight. I picked up the basket, tightened the blanket across my shoulders, and stepped over the threshold. I closed the door behind me, walked down the front steps, and turned west. My plan was simple and foolhardy. Steal a rowboat, cross the river to Jersey, and walk to Charleston. I was counting on the commotion of the Queen's Ball to distract folks. If I could get to the boat in time, the tide would help pull me away from New York. At the first corner, my feet stopped. This was where I turned north most mornings to head up to the Bridewell. I urged my feet west toward the wharf. They did not listen. My memory called up the feel of being locked in the stocks, of my face being burnt, of him watching me from across the courtyard, him watching out for me. 'Twas Corzin who made sure I survived. 'Twas he who had been my steadfast friend since the day they brought me here. I couldn't. It would be hard enough to sneak past two armies and not get stolen again by someone who would tear up my pass. And I didn't even have a pass for him. How to explain that? No, I couldn't. I looked west, toward the river, then north, then west again. No, not couldn't. I shouldn't. But I had to. I had a debt to pay.